Session number 12241, Mr. William Laverick, Reel 11.
Mr. Laverick, Reel 11. We were talking about your time when you were still connected with sort of batteries and things. I'm not quite sure what your role was in this battery near the near CM. You helped put up the GL.
I was the sergeant in charge of the unit, didn't we? That were on the site preparing for the GL.
And what was the unit you were now in? I mean, were you still...
I was still with the 5th.
409.
With 409. I was still with that unit, although I wasn't with 409. I was still with the headquarter unit, you see. And it was peculiar because it was getting on towards the end of the 1940s now.
1940.
The end of 1940 was it must have been towards the end, because actually I went to headquarters. It was after all this job was done, whatnot. And I went into headquarters, and they said, "Oh, we have a job for you. We got a prisoner you got to take down to Aldershot." And you can take him because you're not doing anything at the present. I'd finished the job that I was on. I wasn't with any unit, so I had to take this prisoner down to Aldershot. He'd been sentenced to 56 days at the glasshouse. You see, and they thought that I was the right person to take him down. Being out of a job at the time, nothing really pressing. So I got the job of taking this prisoner down to Aldershot. And I'll never forget it, because I said, "Well, seeing that I'm out of a job, I'm due some leave. I've been on courses and courses and courses. I've missed leave. Every time I've been away, I seem to have missed some leave. I'm due a leave." Now, I said, "I've got a sister-in-law that I've not seen since I was married. Why not give me a few days pass for a few days at the time I'm down there?" "Right," they says, "we'll give you a pass for a week. You can take your prisoner." She says, "Down to Aldershot." He says, "And you can have a pass for a week." So I said, "Good enough, that'll do me, champion." So I took the prisoner away down to Aldershot, and I remember that it was late when we got down. You could never depend upon trains then. It was a very awkward situation. You could never depend upon trains. It was late when I arrived in London. So what I done, I went to the nearest military unit that I saw, the first military unit that I saw, told them that I had a prisoner to get through to Aldershot. It was no use taking him through. I wouldn't get him in that night. So I stopped at Chelsea. I was sent down to the Chelsea barracks, and I stopped overnight. He was put in the guardhouse, and I stopped at the barracks. And the next morning, I took him through to Aldershot and got him put through in the glasshouse. Actually, I wondered if it was me that was being put in the glasshouse, because when you got the order double, the prisoner, you had to double with him. You had to double with him and see him through the showers and all this, that, and the other, till he was processed right through into the glasshouse. So I processed him through, and I remember I left there and I went back, and my sister-in-law, her husband was in the RAF, and she was living down in the Isle of Dogs. So I nipped down to the Isle of Dogs and I met her, and I said, "I'm down in London, they've given me a few days leave, we'll do a show." And she says, "Yes, I would love that, but it'll have to be early," she says, "because I'm doing fire duty at night." She was doing fire duty during the nights. And she says, "If I get to bed early, we can do a show in the afternoon, and then we can come down to from the city again." So I remember we went and saw a show, and I'll never forget it. It was a real, for wartime, it was an excellent show. It was, what was it again? But anyway, it was a musical. Or the Desert Song. They were doing the Desert Song, a musical of the Desert Song. And the singing was excellent. We really enjoyed the show. And we saw the show, and we came back. And we just got back to the Isle of Dogs when the sirens went. And this was September, in the September time. And here, if it wasn't the start of the Blitz, the sirens went. I'd heard the warning minutes before, but I'd never heard them so close. And she had to grab a helmet and go straight down to the fire station. And she gave me the key. And she says, "Now, there's a bed under the stairs." She says, "We've got it in case of air raids and whatnot. It's underneath the stairs." She says, "You'll see it. You can get down in there, you see." And I went into the house and I just made myself a cup of tea when I heard the start. And I went to the door and looked out. And all I could see was flares. There were flares that were coming down, but I could hear the planes. Suddenly I heard guns open up. Almost next door to where I was, the gun sight. So I thought, right, no sense of getting into that bed tonight. So I had my steel helmet, nipped straight up the gun sight and reported the gun sight and told them that I was down on my unit and I'd be willing to assist them any way they wanted. And straight away the guns were firing over to a gun pit and I was loading the ammunition, 3.7s, loading them into the guns and assisting them there. And after the flares dropped, the incendiaries dropped. We're watching all these incendiaries coming down, firing at the planes. And the peculiar thing was, it was just taken for granted. You know, the gunners, they were just sitting working as though they were on drill practice. And then the heavy stuff came over. You see, they sent the incendiaries first. And then the landmines and bombs followed on top of the incendiaries. And from then on, it was just one. You were in action all the time. That was the first time I'd ever been in action. First time I'd seen an action. I didn't even know the unit I was with. I just reported in and they told me, yes, you can give a hand in a gun pit. And I remember when we stood.
Had you had any training on the three?
Never had any training.
But it was easy enough to pick up.
Well, I was fit. It was the ammunition's heavy stuff. It's big stuff.
So you were just passing them, were you?
Just, I was putting them into the... I was tall. And I was dropping them into hoppers, what they call the hopper, where they're going to the gun. And with me being tall, I could get it nicely into the hopper. And they were passing to me, and I was dropping into the hopper. And then they're firing from there. But, of course, they didn't have the electrical control ones then. It was all, what they call it, there was all hand... to steering and whatnot. And I remember when we stood down and they said, "We'll catch a couple of hours sleep perhaps before the next wave." And the ammunition was in little shelves, in little wee, what they call it, just cubicles on the way around the gun pits. And they just lifted the cover and said, "Nip in, it's the driest place tonight," on top of the ammunition. So you nipped in on top of the ammunition for to have a couple of hours sleep. You didn't get a couple of hours. You just closed your eyes, and before you knew where you were, you were up and the guns were going again, you were out. And belting away. But anyway, the next day I went down and I went into the sergeant's mess. Of course, I was a sergeant. I was loud in the mess. And I went into the mess and, "Hello, how are you?" Of course, I still had my bomb. I still had my infantry. I says, "Oh, I reported in last night. I was down on leave, actually, when things started, and I thought I may as well be, I couldn't sleep through that, I may as well be in a bit of action." He said, "First time you've been in action?" I said, "First time I've been in action." "What did you think of it?" I said, "Well, I didn't get time to think. I thought I was given a job as soon as I went in." I says, "And as long as the guns were going off, I was satisfied." I said, "I knew nothing, but I didn't know how they went off or anything." I says, "But I was satisfied and got on great with them." And they said, "Well, there'll be another lot coming over." I said, "Well, I'll be stopping anyway. So I kind of get away back the way things are. I'll stop." And I stopped for 3 days with the unit. And on the third day...
Sleeping at home during the day, were you?
Yeah, I was going down, sleeping under the stairs during the day. And I would have a few hours sleep and then go back up to the officer's mess. The sergeant's mess. There was a sergeant's mess on the side. I would go up and into the mess and sit and chat with them in the mess, and one of them give me a gun book, you know, a gun drill book. And I sit and watch the gun drill book and got the gun, an idea of the gun drill and such like, and then watching the sergeant in the gun pit and whatnot. And I was still helping with ammunition all the time that the ammunition was needed, popping the ammunition into the hopper and such like. And then they run short of ammunition. And he came in and says, can you drive? I says, yes. He says, well, he says, I'll give you a driver. And then the driver. He says, would you go down and bring up ammunition from Woolwich? I says, yes, we'll go down and get it. Well, the place had been, the place was, he knew, so the bloke that he gave me was a Cockney. He knew his way round, you see. God, when I saw the damage and such like, I couldn't believe it. The dock area, and we had to leave the dock area and keep down the riverside for to go down to Woolwich to get the ammunition and drive there. You thought nothing of driving up with a lorry load of ammunition. Brought it back to the site and loaded up again, loaded the site up. And I think it was the fifth day I was there. I was sleeping down below and going up and getting into action again with them. And I had this gun book that I used to look at and keep looking at. And I said to one of the sergeants on the fifth day, I says, can I have a go at the drill when we start? Yes, he says, you can have a go. He says, I'll give you relief. So there was very little in the gun drill, very little in the gun drill, telling them when to stand to, when to stand there. But he'd already done that. It was just a question of when to, given the order fire, after you heard the reports from the number ones and the ammunition carriers. Now, when you heard that ready, then you gave the order fire and such like. And quite frankly, I enjoyed it. It was a peculiar thing. But as the gun fired, your shell case comes flying out. And you get into the habit of just touching it with your foot as it's coming out. And it moves away from you. And as they were coming out, you start to think about, you never thought about the planes up ahead that you were firing at. It was the ammunition that you're moving out the way. And somebody else was shifting it away from your feet, you see. And I enjoyed it. I thought, right, this is my game after this. So I went and saw the chap, the officer in charge. Like that. I explained to him, I said, mind, I says, any chance of coming down to your unit? He says, oh no, he says, you've got to be drafted through to the various units, the officer told me that. I saw Captain there. And I said to him, well, I says, would you give me a warrant? I says, my warrant's expired. The warrant that I had from the camp's expired. I says, it's expired. I says, I've got to travel across London to get the train to go back to you. And I says, sure thing, I'll be pulled up. And I'll be run in for not having a warrant, you see. He says, oh, yes. He says, I'll give you a warrant. He says, what's your unit? And I handed me AB64 and whatnot. And he took all particulars and wrote a warrant out for me.
And what? Hang on. What do you know? What this unit was that you'd been attached to?
No idea. I had no idea. It was an artillery unit. It was a male artillery unit. It was a male artillery unit. I wasn't attached to it. I just went and joined.
Unofficially attached. Unofficially
attached to it. But anyway, he gave me this warrant, and I was puzzling in my mind what I could say. When I got up there for being this day late, I was a day late now, you see, through this happening, the day over my warrant had expired. But anyway, he gave me the warrant and I went and I got the train back. Another awkward journey coming back. I was on the train. Trains in those days, you could never tell what time they would arrive or anything. But anyway, when I got back to the headquarters, I was immediately met with, oh, you've been in action. Have you enjoyed yourself? And actually the chap, the captain that had given me my warrant, had taken the particulars from the RB64, from the RB64. He'd taken the particulars from there. And he must have phoned through and told him that I'd been with his unit and that he'd been quite happy with the assistance that they'd got for the time I was there, you know, quite pleased with it. He says, oh, you've been in action and enjoyed it, have you? And of course, from then on, oh, I was the only one in the unit that had really been in action. You see, I was the first one into action. And I went straight along and I put my name down for Royal Artillery. I would like to move into the Royal Artillery. I'd fancied the guns and took the particulars and sent them off to wherever they had to go. And the next thing I knew was that I was posted to the Royal Artillery. I said, but I wasn't posted to a school or anything. I found that I had a report to a unit down at, what do they call it? Next to where they go across for the across the channel on the... Felixstowe, that's where it was. I had to report to Felixstowe. So I reported to, I got my warrant and went away and went to Felixstowe. And here, it was an entirely different gun. It was a mobile unit I'd been posted to. And they...
Do you know what it was called?
I don't. But I was posted to this mobile unit. And you know, if I'd had my RB64, I could have told you, because all the things are in there. Ronald's got that. And I was posted to this mobile unit at Felixstowe.
And what about what date was that?
Well, that would be the Battle of Britain had started, because we moved up from Felixstowe to Hayes. We moved up to one of the suburbs in London. I remember we were firing.
The Blitz? I mean,
the Blitz had started. It would be after May. It would be the end of September. It would be the end of September, October. It would be September or October, the winter. Because the Blitz had started. The Blitz had started when I was down there.
That's right, yeah.
The Blitz had started. But I was posted down to this unit.
And what gun did they have?
They had a 3-inch. They had 3-inch guns, mobile. And, of course, it was an entirely different type of gun to what I'd ever seen. So, of course, when I told them that I'd never had any action on that gun, that the only action I had was loading ammunition into a 3.7. I said, no, I only got that accidentally. Told them how it happened. And he says, you've been posted down to us. He says, we are on with our final preparation. He says, we're expecting, we're going on from here to battle school, to a firing camp, then to battle school, and then we're going overseas. So I thought, oh, well, that's it. I'll have to get used to the gun. So what they done, they made me orderly sergeant, unit orderly sergeant, you see. And I could go up whenever the guns were being used, and whatever when the gun drills were being practiced, I could go up and hang around and see what was taking place. The gun drill wasn't very much different, except that you had legs to bring down to get them on the bottom and such, like to get it on the bottom. You couldn't fire from the wheels. You didn't fire them on your tanks from the wheels. You had to bring the legs on the bottom and such like. And this was an entirely different thing to what I was used to, but I picked it up as I was going along. And by the time we had a session at practice camp, I could actually take sergeant's place in the number one of the gun, but not the unit. You see, previously with the searchlights, I was in charge of the searchlights, but now I only had the one gun. I was number one of the one gun, you see, but we had four guns. We actually had four guns, 4 3-inch. And we went to firing camp in Wales. Went to firing camp in Wales. And the time we were there, we had to revert to infantry for a week up in the mountains. A battle training course, school.
What was that like?
Hell. This is where you were. This is where you were amongst real ammunition, real grenades, everything thrown at you, everything that was areas, you see, what they had in the hills and whatnot. You had these certain areas, and you would have a notice board, stomach, telling you to get onto your stomach, real ammunition was being fired. So you hadn't to lift your head, you hadn't to get up, and you were on your stomach doing with your rifle. We reverted back to infantry for this period, you see, for your battle training. And I think this was an excellent idea. To be an infantry, well, I scored here because I had actually been in an infantry. I'd done this training time and time and time again, and I scored when I was at I could really lead a section. I could lead a section through the battle training fields, and in the mountains we used to have, you had your cape, your gas cape, and we also had a water cape, and with the two capes you made yourself little bivvies under the spur of the hills and whatnot, and that's where you slept at night. In the morning you got up, you had to still shave, although you'd done battle training. down to the stream and shave. You still had to shave. You're doing battle term, we still had to shave though. I always remember cold water shaving. I didn't like it. But we used to get a shave, and then you had to get you had your tinned rations in those days. We had tinned rations, and you had to use your tinned rations, and you had to stop out in the hills. And boy, it was murder, because cold at nights, it was back end, it was wintry, it was winter, and it was cold at night, and you could see the lights of the town and the warmth down below you. And you had to stick this out. You stuck this out for the next fortnight, battle training in the hills and feeding all tin stuff, all cold stuff that you were eating, biscuits and all this, that and the other. And then we went back, and the unit were reformed. They got their guns, they had their guns and such like at firing camp. Went back to firing camp, assembled. But we're going overseas. We're going to go overseas. And we're going to go to Dover. They must have been taken off, going to be Dover for near the place for disembarking, you see, for embarkation. And we were going to Dover. And we arrived in Dover, and that night I was sent for and asked for my AB-64, handed over the AB-64. And he says, "You've been assigned to another RA unit." He says, "You've been assigned to another RA unit." He says, "You're only sent to us temporarily." He says, "You're going to have to report to a school down in Oswestry." So I left them, got my equipment together and such like, and left Dover and went to Oswestry.
Were you disappointed?
I was. I knew all the chaps then would really enjoy us. We'd enjoyed the battle school, actually. Although it was tough and whatnot, and I'd got to know the gunnery people. They'd got to know me. I'd learned the drills and whatnot. I wasn't leading sergeant there, but I enjoyed it.
Now, during all this time, since the war started, had you been actively engaged in politics, or had you put that behind you, except for just perhaps conversations?
Just conversations. We hadn't the active part hadn't come. Because we didn't, you see, it was all war training then. But later on, there came a time when war looked like for the last year of the war, when they were going to have to make provisions for the demobilisation. So that's when that's when the politics came in.
So your at the time, being in the army and being a good soldier was part of your political aims, I suppose, in the sense that you were fighting.
That's right. I was hoping to fight the Nazis. That's what it was.
So your political aims and the army's aims coincided at the time.
At the time.
So you weren't in any way organising any trouble or anything.
No, nothing like that in the army. Not then.
Were you at all? It's not that socialists are troublemakers, because they're not necessarily.
I had certain troubles in the services. You see, I was telling you that you had good officers, but you also had some rare sods, there were. You had some rare sods as officers. And I always remember one time, and it was at this time when I was actually in the artillery, and the lads, I was in charge of the hut, and it was essential that beds were always made up in the morning in a certain regulation style, and your boots, soles up out on the top, you see. And I was site sergeant, and this officer came along, a Scotsman he was, and came into the hut, and I could see, so I had never met him before, he was new to me. And the men weren't there, they were on the guns, there was a time for working, cleaning the guns, this is when I was on the gun sites, this, and they were on cleaning the guns and things. And he strolled down the barrack room and he said to me, "Put this man on a charge." And this was an officer from headquarters. They used to come and side visit to make sure that you were on your toes, you see. "Put this man on a charge." So I went down, got my notebook and pen out and write what's wrong. Told him when he stood in his boots. And this was a fact, he said. I looked at him. I says, "Put him on a charge for too many studs." "Yes." He says, army regulations, so many studs in each boot. He says, this boot has more, that boot has more. And I looked at him. I said, can I put him on a charge for that? I said, I've told you, put that man on a charge. So I thought, right, I better do as I'm told, that's what I'm here for. So I wrote the name of him down and such like. And the officer went away. He says, have him up at headquarters tomorrow. I had to take them along to headquarters. I wasn't at headquarters. I had to take them along to headquarters to have him put on the charge. He was a second lieutenant, you see. He wanted to show that he's show his authority and show that he was doing something on the sites. So I said, all right, I'll have him there tomorrow morning. But fortunately for me, I went to see the chap and told him that he'd put him on a charge. Too many studs in your boots. These were spare boots, you see. You always had a spare... a set of spare boots. He said, well, I can't help that, Sarge. He said, I just got them from the cobblers yesterday. I says, where, from headquarters? He says, yes. We had a cobbler at headquarters, you see. I says, oh, you did, didn't you? So I phoned through headquarters. I says, will you give me your name, your cobbler, please? Yes, give him the name. What's his number? So-and-so. Right, I says, would you please tell him that he's on a charge and I want him outside the office at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. This was headquarters, you see. And I'll never forget it, because when I met the cobbler, I'd never met him before, and he was just a little chap. He was just a wee chap. And I says, Hill, you're on a charge. You put too many studs in a pair of boots. He says, you don't think I'm going to count the bloody studs I put in a pair of boots, do you? I says, well, I says, according to this officer, the regulation states to loan the officer. He says, I've never seen that regulation. I says, okay, you're on the charge anyway. I says, be outside the battery office. I went and got him. We're standing outside the battery office. I hadn't brought the other chap in, you see. And this officer comes along, and then he looks. And he says, have you brought your... I said, I've got him here. And he looked. He says, but he's a headquarters man. I says, yes, he's the cobbler. He's the man responsible for putting the studs in the boot. And he took me inside. He says, I told you to... I said, can I put him on a charge? I says, he hadn't worn the boots. I says, they just come back from headquarters yesterday. I says, only just got them back from headquarters. I said, I've put the cobbler on the charge. He put the studs in the boot. Oh, he says, we can't do anything about that. You see, he was wanting the charge to go down as his. He'd done his job that day. He'd had so many men on charge and whatnot. But he immediately turned around and said, oh, I'm not going to put a headquarter. Can't put the cobbler in. We'll just wash it out, tear it up. And this was the type that you met now and then. You came across in the services.
So you didn't try and directly confront people. You tried to work around them.
Always tried to work around.
You didn't confront them directly.
No. There was always a way around. If you checked, you could always find. And the same when a lad was on a charge, you could always find a reason to put towards the officer to account for maybe the charge that the lad had been on.
You'd do that, would you?
Oh, certainly. I got on well with all the units I was in. I always got on well with the chaps.
So you tried to avoid people being on charges?
Well, people had to be on charges, but I always made sure that I tried to get the most lenient punishment possible for them.
What if you'd agreed they should be on a trial? What sort of things did you disapprove of?
Absentee, when they should be on duty. You see, it was quite easy in these camps for a chap to walk out for a drink. I didn't disapprove of him being out for a drink on condition he was there when the alarm went. But if they were out when the alarm went, they were on a charge. They had to be on a charge. They weren't there for duty. And I would definitely charge them for that sort of
thing. So you took that sort of thing seriously?
Seriously,
not
oh, so yes.
Bothered about studs on shoes and
It was negative. Studs on shoes. It was a ridiculous... It was something I would never have even looked at myself.
Did you get in trouble yourself at all?
I did. Yes, I lost a prisoner.